Thank you, Steve. It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And here we have our semi-weekly. Is it bi-weekly, semi-weekly?
It's every 14 days.
I never know how that goes.
I don't either. Fortnightly. I don't know what it is. He is clinical psychologist, author, Dr. John Duffy. He does a podcast called Undo Anxiety, which you can find on his website, drjohnduffy.com, or here on WGN Plus. How are you?
I'm good. How are you guys? It's good to be here.
We're fine. I know this is selfish, but I know what a sports fan you are.
Yeah.
So I was saying to you, right now we're having some trouble on both sides of town. The White Sox and the Cubs aren't winning quite as often as we need them to.
Correct.
And there was a time where in sports a team would have a team psychologist, a sports psychologist.
Right.
Is that still a thing, John, or has that gone away?
It's still a thing, although I don't know if either of those teams is doing it. It seems to be dissipating quite a bit, and managers often take over the psychologist job.
Oh.
And I think Joe Maddon in particular is a pretty effective, up to date anyway, team psychologist. In other words, like, he's a really good stress manager. This idea of, like, we're gonna dress up like it's Anchorman. You know what I mean? Like, we're gonna take some of the stress away. You can freak out if you want, but we're not gonna freak out. It's pretty good psychology. So I don't know if the Cubs needed, up until maybe last night, a team psychologist. But I get your point that, you know, like, a little psychology, a little, like, considering, like, okay, so what's getting in our way here?
Right.
Right? You know, because it's not talent. So on either side of town, really, it's not talent. So there's some kind of mental block, right?
Yeah.
And there's got to be a way to get past that collective mental block. And I find that psychology is really helpful in doing that.
Psychologists are. Well, look at the – I mean, everybody knows this story, but they have this guy, John Lester. He's one of the best pitchers in baseball.
Yeah.
But he's got a mental block. When the ball is hit anywhere near him, he can't physically throw the ball to first base, which is a job requirement if you're a pitcher, but he can't do it.
And I think most people in my field would love to have it, John Lester, for a couple of hours.
Yeah, to figure out,
like, okay, so what's the block there? Why can't you get that ball to first base
and
get that guy out? Because that's an easy out for you.
Yeah.
And, you know, what's in the way? And there's something there. I'm confident
that's weird.
Yeah.
That is a weird thing that a baseball player would have.
Right. But there have been other guys in baseball. I'm trying to think of the name of the second baseman who used to be so perfect, and then all of a sudden, boy, who was it? About 10 or 15 years ago, he just couldn't throw to first base anymore. He's a second baseman, and it ruined his career.
I'm not sure who you're referring to, but there's a guy named Malcolm Gladwell who applies economic concepts to virtually everything.
Yeah.
And he would argue that athletes, when they get in their head and they start thinking instead of letting muscle memory take over, it's like they're just beginning to play all over again. If you watch Schwarber's first couple of swings before he actually hit that home run, he looks like he's 11 years old trying to swing at a ball, right? He's way behind it and he's way underneath it. And then when he finally makes contact, he's jubilant like an 11-year-old kid.
Right.
And so if you can get him thinking, like, you know, okay, just remember what you've practiced a million times over, and don't let whatever mental block is getting in the way get in the way.
Right.
Then you're free and clear. But too many guys let that get in the way.
That happens to a lot of people in a lot of professions. I know if I'm doing like a live commercial or during an interview where I go, wow, I'm really nailing this, all of a sudden it's like I completely mess up.
Right.
It's like I can't think about what I'm doing. I just have to do it. And that's for a lot of people in a lot of different areas of life.
It's so true, Wendy. You know, we often, no matter what we do, we're saboteurs in our professions oftentimes. Sometimes we're afraid of failing, but just as often I find people are afraid of succeeding. What does that mean? How high does the bar go for me? How high are the expectations? Can I really live up to that? So maybe I'll just underperform a little bit.
That's what we do. We set the bar really low,
really
so
low.
Then every day we look better.
I think you guys are killing it.
But that is, like, on paper you say, why would anyone be afraid of success? Afraid of failure, that's obvious. But
right.
Why would anyone be afraid of success? But that's just as prevalent as afraid of failure, isn't it?
I think it's exactly as prevalent. Yeah, I mean, sometimes I think they run together. I mean, you know, so sometimes I think people just have this fear about performance in general. You know what I mean? On the job.
Yep.
And so in order to manage that, sometimes I do think that a professional is really, really helpful. You hear more and more about executive coaches going into businesses and talking to professionals. And a lot of what they're doing is just trying to keep them in their lane and remembering what their skill set is, what they're really good at, and that it's okay to push themselves a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah.
All right, you mentioned a baseball player that you couldn't remember his name.
A second baseman who had all of a sudden, he was as accurate could be for years, and all of a sudden just could not throw a ball to first base.
David, you know who it is?
I do. It's Chuck Knobloch. He was an all-star with the Twins and was very accurate indeed. And then he left for the Yankees. I think it was via free agency. And when he got to New York, all of a sudden the wheels fell off.
Yep.
He couldn't even throw a 20-foot ball. Easy routine plays. He couldn't.
How does that happen?
Well, the speculation with Knobloch was that he's going to the big market and all the pressure playing before the New York fans, but it had to be deeper than that because it's a 20-foot, 30-foot throw. So that no one ever really could figure it out, and he never really solved it. I believe they started to DH him. Lucky for him, he stayed in the American League, but if he was in the National League, his career probably would have been over.
Right. And I think that's why they do things like DH guys or move them around in the order in order to shift that level of pressure that they're experiencing, hoping that that changes their perception of the demand of them on the job.
Yeah. At least with Knobloch, they could point to a reason,
right,
like lesser, which really defies logic.
I would think you wouldn't want him on your team if he can't throw to first base.
Well, when they made the deal for him, he was an all-star second baseman with Minnesota. Everybody thought, this is what a great thing to have, but he just fell apart.
All right.
Crazy.
Thank you, David.
Thanks for knowing that, David. I appreciate it.
All right. Well, with baseball, of course, that means summer is here, and that means, oh, my God, I cannot wait for school to be over with. The trying to get two teenage boys out of bed. You didn't have trouble with your girls, did you?
Not really, no.
You are so lucky you had girls.
Why do I know that?
I mean it.
I so know that.
And, you know, I have two graduates, one from eighth grade and one from high school this year. So they have worked really hard. I can't wait for them to have summer vacation, but I have to watch what they're doing. We'll find out as we come back. Dr. John Duffy with us, 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff, it's Wendy Snyder, and it's 720 WGN.
Dr. John Duffy is here, clinical psychologist, best-selling author, and as Wendy just pointed out, now it's summer all of a sudden and everybody's schedules change. What do we need to know?
Right. So, you know, we tend to glamorize this. We look forward to this time of year, kids, adults alike, right? Because it's exciting and we get to take it easy finally after all the finals and all the, you know, end of school year stuff. And the tendency a lot of us have is to underschedule the summer. We're going to take it easy. We're going to chill. We're going to relax. And I'm all for that for about a week or so.
And then I think
you have to get back to some semblance of routine. Getting up at the same time, getting to a gym, getting a job, doing something that creates some routine in your summer. Otherwise, and a lot of parents would agree with me, 3 months from now when you try to get back to it, it's nearly impossible to get your kids even just back on a sleep schedule and yourself. So this stuff gets really, really tricky. And over the course of the summer, I find that the excessive loose time tends to be a little depressing and anxiety provoking over time. You know, you eventually want something to do, some mission. Mm-hmm. We all need that. And we forget that over the course of the summer. So
I was just reading somewhere on Facebook, someone posted that, you know, if you want to make your kids learn to be adults and to be a perfect adult, they need to have chores. Would you agree with that? I have not been one at divvying up chores because, again, with all boys in the house, I want it done right. Yeah. So I may as well just do it myself.
Sure. Yeah, so I think that's a fine way to create some structure. I don't think it's the only way. You know, so I've worked with a lot of families where kids have very little they have to do around the house, but there's a lot they have to do outside the house, you know. So as long as there's something built into their lives, into their schedules, I don't really care if it's chores. I'm not much for fighting over the clean bedroom. I just as soon like close that door if it's not a big priority and have them out and about doing something in the community or earning some money or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
When you say you want to put your kids on some sort of a schedule throughout the summer, does that include something that's education-based? Do you want them doing anything that keeps them in the mindset of a school year, even though it's the summer?
Actually, it depends, but oftentimes not. I often like something that's like adventure-based or something that's completely different, because over the summer, there's this opportunity for kids who don't do particularly well in school to excel in something else. Like I find the kids who are not like great students, like your C student tends to do really, really well at Mariano's bagging groceries. Yeah. Really, and that's true, you know? And so looking for ways to build their self-worth, especially if they're struggling during the school year.
Right.
I far prefer that.
Right.
Yeah.
All right.
That is, you know, I don't know what is wrong with me, but I feel so sorry for kids today because I kind of skated through school. It wasn't that hard for me, mm-hmm. and there wasn't a lot of work back when we went to junior high and high school. And now you know, I feel guilty when I, you know, I'm up walking the dog at 6:30 in the morning and I see some kid walking to school with this giant backpack on. I'm like, oh my God, they're going to school at 6:30.
Yeah.
What's wrong with me? Why do I feel guilty for them?
You know, I think it's reasonable. I think the pressure on kids, especially high school kids, but even younger now, to do really well and to get into the very best college they can get into and do, you know, the very best they can do in classes and be involved in everything, I think we're overdoing that and overstressing our kids wildly, actually, you know. So I feel bad too when I see that kid, you know. I feel like, boy, there's got to be some time, just to be a contrarian, sometime during the school year where kids get to be kids, where they're not just coming home and taking off the backpack after like a practice or a meeting and then getting back to right to work and then going to sleep so they can do the same thing all over again. I think we're missing some fundamental part of being a kid
right.
when we don't allow them any loose time
right.
whatsoever, you know?
Right.
And think about it. You know, we always push our kids and say, you know, you got to learn how to do this because someday when you have a job, you know, if you don't turn in something via, you know, at a deadline, you're going to get fired. But come on, let's be honest. A job is way better than going to school, is it not?
Well,
and you get paid.
When I get kids coming back to me after 10 years, they'll say, wow, college was so much easier than high school
yeah.
and a job.
Easier?
Easier. Yeah. Like just because you're not sitting in a room for 7 hours a day.
I guess,
and then
yeah.
coming home and working, you're in control of your schedule as long as you can maintain some of that control. And then the job, it's like, well, I can do that anytime. You know,
right.
like that's no problem whatsoever. So I think we might be over-preparing our kids for a difficult future that might be not that difficult.
John, how about this? I was one of those kids that was not a morning person. I'm still not a morning person.
Right. But he is ambidextrous.
I am ambidextrous, Wendy. You can make
He's
fun.
He's very proud. I'm not making fun. You're just, you know, usually you whip that out in a conversation.
But I was not a morning person on my left side or my right side, just to keep up with this. But, all right, so during the school year, you know, I'm getting up at 7:30 or 7:45 for school, and
right.
I'm miserable because I'm getting up that early. And I so looked forward to those 3 months of summer where I could sleep till 10:30 or 11 or 11:30.
Right.
You don't want to necessarily take that away from a kid, do you?
No. I mean, I'll be a bit of a contrarian. You
yeah.
know, I don't mind stretching that out a little bit and letting, you know, 10 o'clock, I have no problem with that.
Yeah.
As long not as two it's in not, the afternoon.
As long as it's not two in the afternoon.
Right.
And, you know, I read something recently that I actually agree with that says some degree of boredom for kids is a good thing, especially now when there's, you know, so much technology available to them. To have to figure out some creative way to entertain yourself is a really good thing. We all did this when we were kids, you know,
yeah.
and I think that's a really good thing. So, no, I don't mind some element of that.
Right.
I think what I'm pressing for here is just some degree of balance between
yeah.
the two.
Yeah, that makes sense.
And you say boredom, and my kids will never admit to this, but I can always tell the last few weeks of summer, there's a little anxiety about going back to school, but they're also excited to get back to school because it's like, okay, enough of this. I've been doing nothing all summer. Time to get back in the swing of things.
Absolutely. You give any kid truth serum, they're going to tell you in August, yeah, I'm kind of ready.
I was never ready. You know, it's
no?
so weird. I love
That's because you're ambidextrous.
I am ambidextrous, John.
You could always go to the left side if you
right.
needed to.
Right.
You weren't sort of excited to see who was in your class? Or...
No. I loved summer vacation, and I did really well in school, but there was just something about the lack of structure of summer. Play baseball all day, ride your bicycle all day. I loved that.
So did you create – it sounds like you may have created structure in your summer by – was there
By
something you did every
structure,
day?
Structure, yeah, but it was all.
But you always had something going on, so you did.
There was
schedule
no downtime. Yeah,
yeah,
yeah.
No, I love the idea that you were playing baseball and stuff.
Constantly.
I think there's this tendency for kids today, and I can't really blame them because they've got an iPad
yeah.
or you know an iPhone to just go downstairs into the basement and sit on the couch and play that all day
right.
instead of like getting out and about. So you know if more kids today were living like you did when you
yeah.
were a kid, I'd be all for that.
Yeah, I hope
yeah.
so. Yeah, it was fun.
Yeah.
My boys are not into sports at all, but we have so much time going garage sailing in the summer. I love it. And listen, we all look for different things and we all have a really good time doing that.
I can so picture that. And you know, whatever works for your family, I think, you know, you go with. But the more of it that happens out and about instead of in,
yeah,
I think is good.
I agree.
Are there any ambidextrous garage sales? Because I'm ambidextrous and I would go with you if they had those.
More often than not, that comes up when we talk about anything. Well, I'm ambidextrous, you know. It makes
John,
you special.
Why are people so jealous of this?
I don't understand why
anyone would be jealous.
I feel for you, Bill.
It's a gift from the heavens. Right, you can't be jealous. Right. Come on. That's Dr. John Duffy, highly sought-after clinical psychologist, best-selling author. The book is available, The Available Parent, wherever better books or even some not-so-good books are sold. But his is one of the better ones. Thanks, John, for being